Bible study. My name is Sarah Ford. This week we're exploring wisdom in the Old Testament, which may seem odd in a summer dedicated to exploring the foolishness of God, but wisdom and folly are very much interrelated. You can't have one without the other. And Jesus himself was a wisdom teacher, so we're exploring these ideas of foolishness and wisdom in our readings. Today's reading, before I get there, yesterday we had a really interesting discussion about wisdom as the listening heart, and I just wanted to check and see if there was anything left over from yesterday, any thoughts that occurred to you as you walked around. If not, that's fine, but maybe you have something. Something appeared to you in a dream.
No, actually, something appeared to me at the bookstore. But they had beautiful little hearts from Kenya, carved out of soapstone. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is a wonderful symbol for me to take home as a reminder of the same cause.
Oh, excellent. Good. The sales of soapstone cards are about to skyrocket.
Well, they are.
You may have cleaned them out.
I was just reflecting on the, you know, we talked about dreams and whether or not dreams mean anything or that kind of thing. And I don't know a lot about dreams, but my sense is that sometimes God comes in the night, whether it's in a dream or it's just in a, you know, kind of a waking up and a realization, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So. Have you had that experience?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember a dream that I had once. My mother had died in another state, and I was concerned, of course, that I hadn't been there and spent some of the last days with her, and that kind of bothered me. And one night I had a dream, and my mother came to me in the dream, knocked on the door. You've seen the picture of Jesus knocking on the door? Well, that was interesting. My mother knocked on the door, and she said, "Honey, don't worry. I'm just fine. I'm with Jesus." And then I didn't worry about that anymore. So that was a wonderful dream.
Very powerful.
I had the same kind of dream about my grandfather.
Grandfather. Uh-huh. Anything else from yesterday's? Well, if it occurs to you as we go along today, do speak up. So today's passage, again, it's going to be secret until we read it out loud. So I'm encouraging us to listen rather than read, since these stories were for hundreds of years shared orally. Today's story comes from 2 Samuel, and it involves a general of David's. Now, David was the great king, a man after God's own heart. And by this time in the story, in the history that the Deuteronomistic historian tells us, David has fought against Saul, been anointed by Samuel, fought against Saul, dealt with the Philistines, finally claimed the throne. Then his own son rose up against him. He had a little dalliance with this woman named Bathsheba, which got him into a whole lot of trouble. And the prediction that his house would be a house of blood and violence, and indeed it did. And there were these constant uprisings against David. This is towards the end of his life. And we're going to hear about yet another rebel who wants to take on David. Only in this case, David is back in the throne room, and it's his general Joab who has gone out to chase the rebellion. So I'll start, and I have some readers. The rebel's name was Sheba. Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth Maacah, and all the Beitrites assembled and followed him inside. Joab's forces came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacah. They threw up a siege ramp against the city, and it stood against the rampart. Joab's forces were battering the wall to break it down. Then a wise woman called from the city. Wise woman? Cue the wise woman.
Listen. Tell Joab, come here, I want to speak to you.
He came near her, and the woman said,
are you Joab?
He answered,
I am.
Then she said to him,
listen to the words of your servant.
He answered,
I am listening.
Then she said,
they used to say in the old days, let them inquire at Abel. And so they would settle the matter. I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?
Joab answered,
Far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not the case. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim called Sheba, son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give him up alone, and I will withdraw from the city.
The woman said to Joab,
his head shall be thrown over the wall to you.
Then the woman went to all the people with her wise plan, and they cut off the head of Sheba, son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, and all went to their homes, while Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king.
Yuck.
Well, there you go.
What's the yuck?
Who is the yuck?
They cut off his head? You. That's the yuck.
Yeah, okay. You haven't watched many video games lately.
Yeah. I wouldn't watch those.
So let's just try to get the facts of this straight. There are some complicated names in there. So it's Sheba is the rebel, and he goes to a city called Abel of Beth Maacah. The name doesn't have any particular significance. No, it's a place in the northern part of Israel. And all the Bichrites assembled. They were his tribe, his clan was with him. And then General Joab follows. What happens then? What's going on here?
They negotiate.
Right. And who's negotiating?
It's a woman.
Called the wise woman. Some translations are clever, but a wise woman. Yeah. Did you catch what she said to them about? We'll go through it again. What else did you notice about this?
It sounded like the city had some kind of historical significance.
Yes. She refers to it as a mother in Israel. A city that is a mother in Israel.
God's heritage.
God's heritage? Yeah. What do you think that might be? A mother in Israel.
Is it a holy place?
It could be. Could have, apparently, she also says to Joab, they used to say in the old days, let them inquire at Abel, and so they would settle a matter. Let them inquire at Abel. It sounds like a maxim, one of those wisdom sayings.
Or a county seat.
Or
a judicial area.
Yeah, maybe it was a formal place. Yeah, good. And what else? Anything else?
Did that refer back to Judges?
Could be. It could still have that kind of. The government wasn't terribly centralized at that point, so. Right. Maybe at another time she would have been called a judge, not just a wise woman.
Mother in Israel could mean that the tribes had intermarried at some point.
in the past, probably.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She went back and consulted with all the people?
Well, we'll read it again. Let's see if she did. Because I think this is a crucial point. Anything else before we read it again?
What was the name of the tribe?
Well, the tribe of the rebel was the Beach Tribes.
So it wasn't one of the 12 tribes at all?
No, I think this was probably a clan group, which is a subset of tribes. Yeah. They were from the north.
The solution, although certainly it was very violent for the one man, probably precluded war.
Right.
That there would have been much loss of life if,
right.
If she hadn't come up with that solution.
Good point. Let's talk about that some more after we read it again. So one more time through. Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth Maacah, and all the Beeshrites assembled and followed him inside. Joab's forces came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacah. They threw up a siege ramp against the city, and it stood against the rampart. Joab's forces were battering the wall to break it down. Then a wise woman called from the city,
"Listen, listen, tell Joab, come here, I want to speak to you."
He came near her, and the woman said,
"Are you Joab?"
He answered,
"I am."
Then she said to him,
"Listen to the words of your servant."
He answered,
"I am listening."
Then she said,
"They used to say in the old days, let them inquire at Abel, and so they would settle a matter. I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why would you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?"
Joab answered,
"Far be it from me, far be it from me, far be it that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not the case, but a man of the hill country of Ephraim, called Sheba, son of Bachri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give him up alone, and I will withdraw from the city."
The woman said to Joab,
"His head shall be thrown over the wall to you."
Then the woman went to all the people with her wise plan, and they cut off the head of Sheba, son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, and all went to their homes, while Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. What'd you hear?
She had enough influence to speak for the people.
That's right. She says, "His head shall be thrown." Let's see. His head shall be thrown over the wall to you. Did she consult anybody?
Pretty good picture.
What?
That had a pretty good picture.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that too. Anything else?
She was a peacemaker.
Yes. Yes, she describes herself as, "I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel."
I'm wondering why the other followers of Sheba didn't attempt to protect him. What happened there?
Well, what did happen? We hear about just the one death. So apparently all those other guys, they got to go home. So if you were making that choice.
Well, she basically asked him, you know, "What do we need to do?"
Right.
"To save this city, you know, how can we save the city? You shouldn't be destroying something so important to the nation, to Israel." And he agreed with that, and he said, "But there's this guy
that we're after. And she said, okay, we'll take care of this guy. And that will do it. And he said, okay, fine. Yeah, we take care of this one guy, we're okay.
Yes, he says, give him up alone.
Yeah. I was kind of getting the impression that she says, one of the peaceable, you know, ones from the city. I'm wondering if she wasn't part of a group of people who were rebelling against Sheba, who had taken over the city and was making all this big fuss anyway. And so, you know, hey, don't worry about that. We've got our own little counter group and we're gonna take care of him. You don't need to attack the city. We really don't want this fight, you know? And I'm wondering if she represents a city that was divided to start with.
Interesting point. Yeah.
He asks for her to give him up. And she says, okay, I'll throw his head over. That's quite a difference.
Yeah.
Why did she decide to throw his head over when she could have just marched him out, frog marched him out?
Yeah.
He might have been tortured pretty badly.
Right. What do you think would happen if she had just marched him out?
Well, they would have taken care of him then.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there could have been much more uprising in the of differing opinions inside the city as well.
Okay, so this could have been a rather complex political situation in there.
Yeah,
and maybe he was already dead.
Yes. I'm going back to the very beginning when it says that Sheba and his followers met outside the city and went in. Are they even from that city? Why are they choosing to fight there?
No. He went through all the tribes. He went up to the north. And
for council, maybe?
Talk it over? Maybe. Could be. We're coming up with some interesting scenarios.
Seems like she could have said, just take it outside, guys. Maybe that was a possibility.
Well, I don't know. I watch, you know, I have teenage kids or something. I watch too many movies. But, you know, he sounds like he's, you know, one of the lead rebels or something like that. Mm-hmm. If they give him over, he'll give away all their secrets and everything. You know, the throwing over the head is to make, in my mind, it's just like to make sure. You know, and they're chasing this one guy, so he has a lot of power, and he has some really conniving plans, or whatever he's been doing, you know?
Right.
And so the rest of them are just the followers of his power, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yes, it is interesting. It says he had been speaking up, he'd been stirring up the people of, right. of the northern tribes against David. So he was a great threat.
Despite all the other things that are going on, it seems to me that it's a very wise way to settle a conflict. You're sacrificing one instead of thousands, and that might be a model for us. Who are we going to put up as a sacrificial one? But getting back to the wisdom part of it, it sounds like a wise way to settle a dispute. You go and then kill someone.
Okay.
We kill people, they kill people in the world. So that's my take on it.
Well, and there also seems to be some justice in this. I mean, if he really is against the king, you know, and he's on this bad path against the king, and if she she believes that the king has rule, then the justice piece, you know, all of the people don't have to die because he's,
Yeah,
okay.
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I listened to it, it was a very practical solution for the whole town, but maybe not for Bathsheba, of course. But I can't help but come back to today, where the solution was different. Mm-hmm. When the United States asked the Taliban to give up bin Laden, mm-hmm. and rather than doing what happened with Bathsheba, they chose a different path.
Sheba.
Yeah. They chose a different path.
Okay, yeah.
When you resolve a conflict inside your family, and the family makes the decision, then that cuts off the revenge factor that the enemy killed our family member. this is, we did this ourselves as the decision versus letting, you know, trying to cut the conflict off. Because if they'd have handed him over and then they killed him, then that gives his followers, well, they killed our leader.
Martyrdom.
Yep. Yeah,
so yeah, martyrdom, like, someone said.
Yep.
Good.
So it's just a matter of trying to cut it off.
Okay. All right.
I wondered what past Gwen had through the city that when somebody brought a message, hey, somebody wants to talk to you, he walks up to the wall to have a chat. Yeah. When he's ready to go to war.
Well, that's an interesting question because I was reading through 2 Samuel last night, and Joab had actually done something like this before. He was pursuing someone to kill everyone, and someone challenged that, and he went, oh, right, okay, we don't need to do this, and he backed off. Interesting.
Pretty wise, too.
Just as a footnote, Joab, though, is one who's killed by Solomon. So to consolidate, when Solomon goes to consolidate his power, as Joab backed Adonijah as the follower, as the successor to David. Just a little footnote after all this.
To me, I was thinking, to me it shows how one person can influence such a vast amount of people within the city, and once that person is eliminated, then the people themselves can rally around them. And it seemed like they were rallying around the woman, the wise woman,
mm-hmm.
who had that solution that, you know, we don't need to listen to that one person. I was thinking of Hitler's head going over the wall, you know. What difference would that make, you know,
uh-huh.
in the World War II? So that's just thoughts.
Yes.
The change of eliminating the person that's kind of spreading the lies and the dissonance.
Interesting point, yes.
So what's the difference between this woman and the leaders of the temple when they took Jesus to Pilate to save the city?
Oh, well, that's an interesting.
And the temple leaders are not wise, right? In all books.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So my take is that this history of the reading is biased, is called this one wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt everything I read. So therefore,
So you're not so sure that she's really wise?
She saved herself and her family.
Okay.
That's definitely not unwise.
Also the city.
And so did so was Jerusalem saved instead of having a riot. By Jesus, you know, Jesus was killed and peace was given to the city. And I find that very wise, that the city was saved.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
He did make the better, he chose the best of two bad scenarios.
Best of two bad scenarios, yes.
Well, in the first place, when she first came out, she said she was faithful. And I sort of tied that into what someone said much earlier about the fact that the followers of Sheba had come together in that place, and probably there was a group in the city that was faithful to David that didn't want to rebel. And she says right up front that that was her position. And then the other part about giving up, throwing his hand over. I mean, isn't that sort of part of the whole cultural system in the
last
time?
Yes.
In the sense that would have been the way to give him up and to prove that they were going to remain faithful.
Yes, and in fact, that is a lesser punishment. Had Joab encountered all Sheba and all of his clan, they all would have probably been put to the sword.
Right.
Now we just put the picture in the paper or on the internet to prove that they're dead. And he took our trip hit back to David is proof.
Probably. Probably, yes. I'm going to let you in on the secret. This is 2 Samuel chapter 20, if you want to read along. Chapter 20. And we're starting at verse 14. 2 Samuel 20, verse 14. So let's, if our readers, if we can do it one more time out loud. I think there's still a few more pieces we can glean from this. And I'm sorry, not everyone, but just, it's odd, but we don't have enough Bibles to go around. Some of the wrong ones. All right. So starting at verse 14, Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth-Maachah, and all the Beshrites assembled and followed him inside. Joab's forces came and besieged him in Abel of Beth-Maachah. They threw up a siege ramp against the city, and it stood against the rampart. Joab's forces were battering the wall to break it down. Then a wise woman called from the city,
"Listen. Listen, tell Joab, come here, I want to speak to you."
He came near her, and the woman said,
"Are you Joab?"
He answered,
"I am."
Then she said to him,
"Listen to the words of your servant."
He answered,
"I am listening."
Then she said,
"They used to say in the old days, let them inquire at Abel, and so they would settle a matter. I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?"
Joab answered,
"Far be it from me, far be it, that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not the case. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim called Sheba, son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give him up alone, and I will withdraw from the city."
The woman said to Joab,
"His head shall be thrown over the wall to you."
Then the woman went to all the people with her wise plan, and they cut off the head of Sheba, son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, and all went to their homes, while Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. Any more thoughts about how this proceeded? Yes.
I just had a flash that any one of us could have served as that woman. If we wanted to preserve our city and our families, we could have had the nerve to stick our head out the wall and say, "Wait, we'll give you his head." And when, I'm not sure how I'm going to get that done, but that stalls for time, you know, it allows for some time, they pull back, and then you just share with as many folks as trust you, "Look, this is the deal, either we all die or this one person who isn't a very good man anyway, and let's take the latter course."
Do you find that a model that you could use?
Well, I think about Dietrich Bonhoeffer trying to assassinate Adolf Hitler. And I think it's a moral quandary, but sometimes it's the lesser of two evils.
Any thoughts about that?
Yeah. Mediation requires listening.
Listening. Thank you for picking that up. Yes, it follows on the theme topic yesterday. Listening. That they. She said, "Listen to the words of your servant." And he said, "I am listening." So there's that listening again. Other things that you see in this. Yeah, Bill.
Well, listening, but does the listening maybe, you know, come to a point where we're with Dietrich Bonhoeffer? How we got to take this guy out, you know? I mean, is it always kind of a quote unquote peaceful compromise where everybody sets aside revenge, sets aside any other extenuating conflict or circumstance?
So you find limits on how on this model.
I resist this idea of a justifiable war, you know? I mean, I'm persuaded to say my dad in World War II had a justifiable war, you know, but...
Or assassinating a head of state.
But in this case, if they hadn't done something, they were besieged. They were, the answer was on the, I mean, it was not, you know, it wasn't really the same situation because they were going to be attacked. They were under besiege. They were either going to be starved or looted and raided. That was really their choice.
She also uses her faith. I am a faithful woman of Israel.
Yes.
This is a faithful city of Israel.
Yes.
She's using her own and the faith of the city.
Her mother image.
The mother image.
Yes. Yes. Very interesting. And she says, why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord? Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord? What's she referring to there?
City.
The city?
The people in the city.
The people in the city? Could I wonder if she also means destroying the innocent, is that's not part of Yahweh's heritage. It's something, that's not what our covenant is about.
So the choice is between destroying the innocent and taking out one bad person. Is that the choice?
Well, that's the way it looks to me. How's it look to everyone else? Anyway.
She was being a diplomat and came up with the solution that satisfied Joab.
Okay.
I mean, it was Joab's idea to send out one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
She decides to send the head out.
That's pretty convincing.
Yeah. So this raises some questions about, I mean, it sounds like we all think negotiation is a pretty good tool, and, you know, it's nice that her town wasn't destroyed. Are we a little squeamish about how she accomplished the ultimate result of this negotiation?
Part of the power of the story is I think in my squeamishness, and I go back to that parallel with Jesus, which is kind of strange because the bad guy would be in the place of Jesus. That is, it is better to sacrifice one to save the city. I mean, we hear an echo of the Gospels in that, and it is like, something strange. I'm thinking of a long time ago reading Jacques Ellul's book, Violence, and Jacques Ellul was a freedom fighter in World War II, France, against Nazi Germany, but his theological argument was you can never, you don't have to agree with this, but his point was you could never condone violence in the name of Christ. You may make a choice, as Jacques Ellul himself did in fighting against the Nazis, or Dietrich Bonhoeffer did.
Jesus, he made a choice.
Or Jesus, you're always making a choice, and Ellul said, and he was also talking about South America, Central America, the guerrillas. He understands the choices that he made. You cannot make that choice to fight and to kill in the name of Jesus. That was his argument. And to me, that's always been kind of a radical statement about nonviolence.
Interesting. And yet this woman seems to be saying that in order to protect the heritage of Yahweh, it's okay to kill.
That seems to be the case.
It's a different ethic.
You could think of it as a parent sometimes might kill to defend her children. Is that okay?
Well, what say you?
What did she say?
A parent might kill to defend their child.
Is that all right?
Is that all right?
Animals.
Animals do it all the time. I wonder, you know, not many of us are put in that position, I would think. I think that would be a rather extreme case.
What about the people on 9/11 on the plane over Pennsylvania? I mean, they had a choice of saving for the whole of more destruction somewhere else.
Right.
And they took over.
That's an interesting parallel. That's an interesting parallel. Yes.
There's something to the fact that she's going to the general of David, wanting to negotiate, and this is his suggestion. So
yes.
She's really making a choice about whether she should accept this. And maybe there's something to the fact that she's faithful and he's the General of David, and so she's accepting his offer.
She's accepting his offer on his terms.
Yes, on his terms of a solution.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question. Faithful, would that have meant faithful to David, faithful to God, or both?
That's a very good point. What do you think?
I think it's to God.
I think it's to God, too, because she cites the heritage of Yahweh. Will you swallow up the heritage of Yahweh? So I think her faithfulness is to God.
But then so is David's. He's faithful to God.
Yeah. Okay, Bill?
I don't know if I'm hearing in this conversation a dual citizenship. You know, Doug mentioned something about Jacques Ellul's fight as a freedom fighter for the French resistance, right? Was he appealing to the rule of law in his country, a sacred duty as a citizen of France, maybe separate from his divinity or his relationship in Christ, you know, which is another citizenship. And when we talk about heritage here, I wonder if we're fusing it all together.
Okay, dual citizenship. Now that's interesting.
Rule of law versus rule as an understanding towards man, uh-huh. And that which is vertical, the relationship with God.
You had it, sir? You had your hand up?
I was just wondering what the heritage is that she's protecting. Is it the maintaining, because it starts out, it's kind of physically the two kingdoms. And I mean, that earlier in that chapter, one follows Israel, and Judah follows Joab, and Israel's following Sheba. But what is the heritage that she is protecting? Is it some kingdom idea, something in terms of special people? I mean, maybe she didn't explain what the heritage is.
Right, that's true. Any thoughts about that? Yeah.
Oh, not in the heritage.
Okay.
Is there a difference between, I can't answer it, but is there a difference between personal sacrifice and sacrifice of others, like when you're responsible for others? Can you expect them all to sacrifice themselves, or do you want to sacrifice one person, or should you sacrifice yourself?
Sacrifice one person or sacrifice yourself? That's a tough one.
Because I can see, you know, I would think if I think if Bonhoeffer should have sacrificed himself if he wanted to make a vote. But to do that
ultimately he
another,
did
to do that of another person.
Yeah.
To expect that from another person and do it. I don't know if I can handle that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So we've got a couple of balls in play. Yes.
She might have concluded that Sheba's head was going to roll no matter how it came about.
Uh-huh.
And as a leader, she knew that if it was done the usual way, that many people would participate in that to the detriment of the humanity.
Uh-huh.
So she came up with with Joab's suggestion, she came up with a way that put a stop to this after a limited amount of time.
Right.
I'm seeing a wisdom there that in an imperfect world that not only saved innocent people but protected some of Joab's soldiers from participating in something that would be awful and diminish their own humanity.
That's right. So can I just say, and then that I think we're looking at this story and what worked in that context, in that historical context. She seems to have done the wise thing. So perhaps the issue for us, you know, how do we take this? How do we apply this? Isn't we'll sacrifice one for the good? Maybe it's the process that she shows us, the process of listening and negotiating and seeing what the least harm is, maybe?
I can't help but come back to 1 Corinthians, because I think this is right where Paul lands in terms of the cross. I mean, how crazy, how foolish is the decision that Christ made in the light of empire, we might say. That is an opposite, it's a very different kind of decision than the decision that is worked out in a kind of wisdom. So I think Paul, I think Paul is understanding wisdom in a slightly different way than, well, you know, let's figure this out, let's discuss, negotiate, and figure out the lesser of two evils. I mean, it's just such a radical move, and that Paul was swept away once he grasped and was overcome by that.
Good point.
Yes, let me get someone who hasn't spoken.
I'm impressed with the fact that, in spite of all the editors and censors of what is now our scripture, we still have a woman who is held up as an example, which, when we listen to the scriptures, especially on Sunday morning, and we have these very carefully chosen pericopes, chosen by men, we don't hear those. But it is in the scriptures that, at least in one example, whether we agree with her choice or not, she is held up as an example of a faithful person of God.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
A faithful, wise woman.
Faithful, what? Yes. Let me just expound on that for a moment, because she's not the only example. Actually, in 2 Samuel 14, there's a wise woman of Tekoa. So we have two stories in this history, one that comes from the north and one that comes from the south tradition. A woman who had the authority, or it may have been an informal authority. Someone yesterday talked about the E.F. Huttons in the congregation, you know, the people you go to listen to and consult. It may have been formal, because at this time in the history, the government was very decentralized. So there was a clan and a tribal structure. She may have actually had some formal position. At least it's nice to think that it's possible that she did. And so it hints, it's that kind of 2% of women's actual history that we get in the Bible that points towards something else. At least that's how I need to read it, because I look in the Bible for actual women. And a lot of men's lives aren't in the Bible either. You know, it focuses on the royalty, the generals, the top layer. So we need to supply and surmise some of the missing pieces of it.
So do our histories, our history books.
Amen, sister. and I'm okay, David. And then
I want to ask a question before I state an opinion. How much do we know? How much do we know anything from the earlier context, which I haven't read, of what the people besieged knew of the purpose of what we... So this is not the modern day where there's been a run-up here with lots of communication and forth. And I think I'm with the issue that it's really listening. That's the model lesson for us. I remember when 9/11 happened, saying to some of my staff as we were watching the TV, the hardest thing for us will be to ask ourselves, why do people, what has brought people to the position of hatred for us here? And put yourself in the position of the people inside that besieged city, asking themselves, that we have no idea what these people are after us for, but it looks like they're determined to wipe us out. And it was in the course of listening that they found out, they found a solution.
Yes.
It seems to me, the more I'm listening here to people, that the wise part is how she had the conversation and convinced him to negotiate at all. Because he didn't need to negotiate, he had them right where he wanted them. So the wise part was before the who was going to be sacrificed. The wise part was convincing him, touching his heart, and she had the mother image there. That was
a wise word. I believe that too.
Yes.
It also strikes me that it sort of turns things upside down, that it was the choice of the people that were being besieged to act that way. There wasn't a leader that's pointed out of this city that makes the decision. It was the people. So she went to the people. And that is also something that sort of is different.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. Good. And anyone else? Yeah.
Is there a broader theme after the death of Absalom? This idea that blood shall be shed?
Hmm.
Not as a righteous act of faithfulness for the sake of the kingdom, but as God's warning of what happens because of what David did. Because he went through it.
Very much so, but it starts before Absalom. It starts with Bathsheba.
Where the punishment is that blood shall be shed. I'm just wondering if the writer is trying to carry that theme.
I very much think so.
Okay.
I very much think so, that we're seeing this played out.
Yeah.
The punishing God.
Not the punishing God, but the consequences of what we do. It's not God who does it, it's us. God allows us to be fools, not in the sense of the theme of the week.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
I don't know.
Well, the other our preacher last night, I forgot her name.
Maria?
In her class yesterday, Alexia, you know, talking about advocacy, for instance, for foreign things, I look at her and I think how brave, you know, to step into these complicated advocacy places for the poor and in, you know, and where our places and all that. And here this woman is with this whole battle going on, and her bravery to get involved and step forward and say, you know, try to stop this whole thing and get him to listen to me. I'm like, wow, that's just a huge wow. Like, do we just sit back and let this thing happen, or do we get involved, you know, for a righteous change, you know, or a possibility of peace, you know? So I just see her courage in this being huge.
Thank you. Yes.
I'd like to put myself in Joab's shoes too and think, I think he showed courage in that he was able to show restraint. And, you know, he said he had nothing to lose. Well, yeah, he might have conquered the city, but a number of his men were going to be killed. And he was thinking of them also. He might have been tempted to say, well, you know, I can go back to David as this great big hero, and we had this battle and we overcame, and how often do we see that in modern day as well?
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, was humble enough also to show the restraint and say, I am going to listen here.
Okay, so it takes two parties to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just add something else about this wise woman. This story and the wise woman of Tekoa are in contrast to so many of the images of women in the Hebrew scriptures. Not all of them, but often you have this theme of lethal women. You come up against women and somebody's going to die. or tricksters. I mean, tricksters have a great place in the Hebrew scriptures because when you're the underdog, you got to do what you got to do to get what you need. So lethal women, you know, I think of in Genesis 38, Tamar, who marries a man, he dies. She marries his brother, he dies. She wants to marry the third brother. The father says, no way. And even though we're told that it was that God was, you know, the issue was not her, we're explicitly told that the, you know, God had issues with these guys. Still, there's this taint of she's trouble. She's trouble. And there are probably others.
What? She got to be more trouble.
And she got to be more trouble. Yeah. Right. So I just offer this up. This is such a refreshing contrast to that, and why I love this story so much. Yes.
A lethal woman that comes up in an echo in the Gospels occurs to me is when John the Baptist's head is presented.
Oh,
let's not forget that story, because that's an amazing story that's told, at least in Mark, it's kind of a, you know, an aside to explain why something else happened, but you know, this daughter of Herodias, or Herodias herself, dancing, the king has already made a promise, so he's got his word, and much to his regret, but there's this woman behind the scenes who's one of these lethal women, I guess.
Yeah.
And it sets all sorts of things in motion, perhaps, with Jesus' ministry.
Good. Other thoughts about our wise woman? Well, I'm going to recycle back to something yesterday that someone said, and I didn't quite pick up on it then, but it was a good thought that we were talking about the story of Solomon judging with the two prostitutes and the live baby. Who does it belong to? And I think I've always assumed that Solomon uncovered the true biological mother, but someone said yesterday, you know, maybe Solomon just decided that would be the best mother. So maybe it wasn't the biological mother. And this woman identified herself as an adoptive mother. So just carry that around. Yeah. So that's really wisdom. Tomorrow we're going to look at a wisdom psalm, and I think also maybe move into Proverbs and look at some of the traditional notions of wisdom in the Hebrew Scriptures. Thank you very much for coming. And again, if you have anything that comes up during the day, let me know.